The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Europe is facing its worst refugee crisis since World War II. And I want to start today's program by just looking at a piece in the Telegraph, because I think it gives a pretty good job of, or does a pretty good job of giving an overview to this escalating crisis. It's titled, Without Borders in Europe, There's No Hope of Ending This Migrant Crisis. The Daily Telegraph writes, the lesson of the past week is that a picture of a dead child can move a continent and overturn the stance of a government, but only, it seems, if that picture suits the politics of influential voices in the public dialogue. You'll recall the picture of that little Syrian boy washing up to the shores of Europe. In the news all around here in Europe, all throughout the UK, last week, and that one image put a lot of pressure. Well, Germany's there putting pressure on a lot of nations, too. But a lot of nations are being pressured to welcome in more of these migrants. The Telegraph continues, for some reason, the appalling photographs of the bodies of children who had been deliberately gassed by the Assad regime, laid out on a concrete floor in Syria 2 years ago, were not sufficiently moving to compel the world to take action. It says, are dead children only a moral outrage when they are on the beaches of Europe? Or is it just easier to use the image of that single drowned child to support the notion of Western guilt? The Telegraph there makes a good point. I mean, you never really know with Western officials. You never know with social media what will catch on or what won't. There's so many tragic events happening daily, and many of them on a scale much bigger than the death of one little boy, as tragic as that is. But look at how many problems this world simply ignores or turns a blind eye to. We've talked recently about Isaiah 59 and how utterly incapable man is of solving the problems of this world. Every once in a while, you'll see an image that galvanizes the media, that gets the attention of Western nations. But will these problems be solved? Back to this Telegraph piece, Europe and America, too, does have a moral obligation to those who have been misled and abandoned by its past irresponsibility. The failure to act against the Assad regime and against the ISIS forces, which have benefited from that failure, has created the conditions for a crisis which has no solution. That's what this is, a crisis that has no solution. All that we've seen in recent weeks is a lot of arguing and bickering, and now within Europe, how to solve this problem. It says, having largely ignored the problem through the summer, perhaps because most of the EU high command was on holiday, European leaders have suddenly sprung into incoherent and contradictory action. So the original responsibility has now been compounded by a desperate frenzy of implausible policymaking to deal with the migrant influx. Everybody's trying to handle it in a different way. It says here, demands for a properly managed, consistent program to be agreed between member states were almost immediately undermined by unilateral pronouncements. Germany clearly believing it owed the world restitution for its historical crimes, summarily announced that it was prepared to take 800,000 refugees. So Germany takes the lead, but none of these other nations are prepared to do that. Many nations don't even want these refugees passing through their nations en route to Germany. The Telegraph says, unfortunately, it failed to accompany this promise with any provision for their safe transport. So its offer of welcome was, in effect, an invitation to yet more thousands of people to risk their lives, as well as being a gift to the people smuggling industry. It's just an open invitation. And so what's going to happen is there's going to be more bodies washing up on the shores of Europe, dead bodies. Promises, open invitations. You can see why quite a few nations across Europe, like Hungary, are so upset. Last week, you might recall, Hungary's prime minister blamed the crisis, the European immigration crisis, on Germany's policies, Germany's immigration policies, Germany's generous welfare system. And Hungary's opinion is shared by several other nations in Central and Eastern European areas. Tens of thousands of migrants, of refugees, are just trampling their way through Hungary and other nations. And they're eager to get to Germany, for sure, because Germany's arms have been wide open to these refugees. The Telegraph says the real fear of the Hungarians and their fellow Eastern Europeans is that the uncontrolled flow of migrants will force an end to the EU free movement policy, which was one of the great attractions of membership for those states. The reason they're up in arms, Hungary, and those from Central and Eastern European areas, is because they know this threatens the EU free movement policy, which benefits poor people in Hungary. If they know that they can get up to Germany or over to the UK because they're in the EU, well, you throw this migrant or refugee crisis into the mix, and nations within the EU are liable to lock down their borders, which prevents refugees from Syria from coming in, and also people in Hungary and elsewhere, Poland, Czechoslovakia, the Balkan states, from moving freely up into the more prosperous nations within the Union, which they've been doing in droves. Here in the UK, about 300,000 or so per year. Well, you can see why Hungary responds the way that it does, and Syria the way that it does, and Turkey and Germany. Even Germany, I mean, their population's in decline, their native population. They need a boost. Their economy's booming. And welcoming in all these migrants, it certainly does give them access to a lot of cheap labor. Everybody's looking out for their own best interests. Here again, Isaiah 59 says that man is incapable of solving the problems of this world. That's what we're seeing. It's not that Europe's just going to blow up and go away, but there are dramatic changes coming. The Bible prophesies that there are dramatic changes and developments that will happen very soon on the continent. And it's actually going to impact the entire world. That's why we've got to keep an eye on this. As much as Americans often don't want to talk about or think about what's happening in Europe, we've got 2 years of campaigning to worry about, many Americans think, as their focus is on American interests. What's happening in America? Who's going to be the next president? How we're going to solve our own immigration problem? How we're going to get the economy revved up again? How we're going to get people back to work? Everyone looking out for his own. This Telegraph piece says, and of course, they're absolutely right. It's almost inevitable that border controls will be reestablished for the duration of the present emergency. Arguably, the Schengen principle, that's the open borders principle, is one of the causes of this crisis. Notice this. It says it's now clearly understood all over the world that all of rich modern Europe will become instantly accessible if you can manage to set foot on any corner of an EU state. So the tiniest Greek island or the southernmost tip of the poorest region of Italy, which have no resources for registering and processing the arrival of huge numbers of people, become the entry points for unrestricted movement. What was intended to be a domestic freedom for Europeans within their own continent has become unbounded territory for the desperate populations of the world. This surely must be the irresistible pitch of the people traffickers. Yes, sir. The people traffickers, the human traffickers who come along and say, look, we just need to get you to this tiny little remote Greek island, and then you're in. It's like getting into the southern tip of Texas, if you're a Mexican. And then you have the freedom to move wherever in the United States. You can move to Virginia, to Rhode Island, to San Francisco. That's what we're seeing play out in Europe. Refugees know that if they can just get to the outer reaches of the Union, then they have a good chance of making it into the most prosperous nation right in the heart of Europe. And that would be Germany. And right now, as I say, Germany has its arms wide open to these migrants, to these refugees. There was a piece in the Telegraph recently as well talking about Germans themselves gathering at train stations so that they could cheer the arrival of Syrian refugees. The article said they greeted them with applause. Germany's welcoming the migrants in at a rate of 100 per hour. And as I say, right now, the government and much of the German populace has opened its arms to these people streaming in. The Wall Street Journal reports opinion polls published last week showed an overwhelming majority of Germans supported helping those fleeing war and persecution. And many have already been doing so. But the comments from CSU suggest such openness may not endure as the emergency situation gives way to the trickier task of providing the migrants with a long-term prospect. See, in the short term, there is a benefit to Germany's economy with, as I say, a native population in decline, with gaining access to a lot of cheap labor. But at some point, just like with the United States, as Americans have awakened to the fact that many of these illegal immigrants are taking away their jobs, are making the streets in American cities more dangerous. Popular sentiment in Germany will change, and dramatically so. The question is when. But what's interesting to watch right now is here Germany is seen as the real benevolent nation, the merciful nation, the nation that wants to help those in time of need. And meanwhile, as the Telegraph continues, Benjamin Netanyahu, the Israeli prime minister, faced criticism after saying Israel could not cope with refugees, so Israel can't take many. Well, you know how that's just an obvious truth. It's kind of common sense. This tiny little sliver of land in the most dangerous place on earth. Well, he's under criticism now for saying Israel's a small country, a very small country that lacks demographic and geographic depth. Therefore, we must control our borders against illegal migrants and terrorism. Even within the Israeli government, Notice this, Isaac Herzog, the opposition leader, urged him to let some Syrians in. Have you forgotten what it's like to be Jews, refugees, hunted? That's what Herzog wrote on his Facebook page. And notice this, this is the same Telegraph piece. Iran, meanwhile, praised the EU's willingness to take refugees. Iran's praising Europe. Iran, the instigator of all the trouble in the Middle East, the cause in so many ways of these problems. They're there now, about to receive all of the billions that Western nations have promised to give back. Sanctions being removed. Carrying on now with business to do in so many areas. And now seen as, well, one of the family of nations. Welcomed right back into the community. Praising Europe for welcoming in the refugees. It's amazing when you see, again, Germany seen here as the good guy and so much of the rest of the world, particularly in the West, Israel, the UK, Mr. Cameron here taking a lot of heat. But so many of the other nations are looking cold and heartless. Whereas Germany welcomes them in. Germany's vice chancellor, just the other day, bragged that his country could take in 500,000 refugees every year, annually. Well, none of the other nations in Europe can sustain that kind of figure. Germany, as I say, has the largest economy in Europe. We've reported previously that it's expecting to take in 800,000 just this year alone. That's nearly four times last year's total. And the impact that this is having on other nations, like Hungary. Nations they're trampling through, as I said. It's a crisis of epic proportions. The worst refugee crisis since World War II. And other nations now are bending to the pressure that Germany's applying. France just yesterday, I think it was, announcing that it would take 24,000 refugees. And then, of course, Mr. Cameron's announcement yesterday that the UK would take in 20,000 refugees. He told members of parliament that Angela Merkel was very grateful for Britain's willingness to welcome in 20,000 more over the next 5 years. According to Breitbart, that means that Mr. Cameron, who was elected on the platform of reducing net migration into the UK to the tens of thousands, will take a minimum of 4,000 more people per year, despite net migration into Britain being at an all-time high at 330,000 over the last year. I mean, it's at an all-time high. And he promised, coming up to his re-election, to reduce it back to tens of thousands. Those are huge cuts, huge slashes in overall or net migration. And yet here, because of the pressure put on by Germany, and one photograph of a little boy on a beach, a dead baby, 4,000 more are added to a nation, really, that has no room for any more. Here he was, elected, partially on the promise of cutting back on the net migration in the UK, into the UK. And now there's a lot of people in Britain who are up in arms. The Daily Mail just yesterday, or maybe the day before, said Britain wants to quit Europe. Shock new poll shows EU no camp ahead for the first time. Where is this leading? The Daily Mail says a majority of British people would vote to leave the European Union in the wake of the migrant crisis engulfing the continent. A shock new poll on Sunday has found. It says if a referendum were to be held tomorrow on whether to remain a member of the EU, 51% of the British people would vote no. It goes on and talks about how the polls in recent years have all shown that the pro-EU camp had comfortable leads. Now that's changed, and dramatically so. UKIP leader Nigel Farage has kicked off a Say No to the EU campaign. I just want to play you a clip from what he said at a meeting last night here in the UK.
I think this referendum in the end will be decided. This referendum will be won and lost on the issue of can we control our borders? Because if we can't control our borders, we are not a nation. Now, in the early days of this, when we first signed up to the common market, it wasn't especially an issue. Because the living differences, the income differences, the education differences, the health differences between the original group of countries weren't that great. You know, whether it was France, the Netherlands, this country, it wasn't that great. And we didn't see big migratory flows of people because we were part of the European project. But the mistake we made, and it's a mistake I argued, you know, very, very hard at the time, and I've been called all the names under the sun ever since 2004 for daring to do so. The mistake we made was to allow countries, some of which had barely recovered from communism, and countries that were very much poorer than we were, to join the European Union and to have the total freedom of movement. It was a change that has led to a migratory wave into this country unlike anything we have ever seen in the history of our islands.
It's the worst refugee crisis for Europe since World War II. And as Mr. Farage brings out there in that speech from last night, for the UK, I mean, this is like unlike anything that it's seen in the history of its islands. A few years ago, or early on, as he brought out, it wasn't that big of a problem when all of the original nations had about the same level of prosperity. But then you open up the borders wider, you welcome in the poorer eastern states in the Union, you give them total freedom to move about wherever, and that's what leads to 330,000 immigrating in from the poorer nations in Europe. And now, with Germany, the largest economy in Europe, saying to Syria and to others in the Balkans and wherever, come on in, we'll welcome you in. You can just see the problems that this presents to the member states. Are dramatic changes coming for Europe? You know that they are. I mean, look, the Greek crisis, that seems like it was years ago now. You don't even hear about it. You don't even read about it anymore. As this one now has superseded that one by a mile. It's all over the news here. Not solvable, so many are saying, so many are writing. There are dramatic changes coming. Going back to that Breitbart piece that I quoted before the clip, it says Mr. Cameron claimed that some of the people in transit across Europe were economic migrants and that many were refugees. His words are in direct contrast with all experts on the matter who now admit that most of the migrants are indeed economic migrants and not refugees. Surely there's some refugees in the mix. But most of them are economic migrants. Most of them just want to move to a more prosperous nation. Most of them are just seeking a more prosperous life. That's the reality. And so one tragic event, one photograph that circulates all around the world It can galvanize the earth, the nations of this earth, the Western nations in particular. But will the problem be solved? Cause and effect. So many of them streaming in. They're economic migrants. In other words, their lives are not in danger. They just want to get into the rich and prosperous nations of the West. Just like so many in the United States, or coming into the United States are. They're looking for money and prosperity. Breitbart says the 20,000 refugees statement was met with jeers from the House of Commons chamber. Meanwhile, a petition to stop all immigration to the United Kingdom has reached a whopping 90,000 signatories, just 10,000 shy of prompting a government debate on the matter. And so it looks like, in addition to debating whether or not Netanyahu should be arrested, the other online petition that's gotten some headlines here of late. But here's a more serious one. 10,000 shy of prompting a government debate on whether we should stop all immigration into the United Kingdom. Wow. Here's one more clip from Mr. Farage's speech last night.
It's a change that means no government, be it at local level or at national level, can actually effectively plan, because it's virtually impossible to predict how many people will be in the country in 2 or 3 years' time. And that, folks, is legal immigration. What we don't know is the extent of illegal immigration, but it is likely that the British population is as much as 3 million people higher than the official estimates tell us. And there is nothing, as members of the European Union, that we can do about this problem.
Nothing that we can do, except, of course, the way he sees it, to get out. To get out. The problem of legal immigration is bad enough. But what about all the rest? It's a similar curse to what America's facing. And even the fact that the truth about this is not being told. So much of the truth is covered up. The facts, as he says, there's probably 3 million more living in the shadows, I guess you could say, like they would about those in America. There's nothing as a member of the EU that Britain can do about this problem except get out, the way many view it. And of course, that's coming. That will happen. And it's looking more and more like this immigration crisis may hasten along that particular prophecy that we've talked about for so many years, that this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire that's now forming in the heart of Europe, that it will not include the United Kingdom. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, and the live stream's available at kpcg.fm. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show.
On the next episode of Live by Every Word.
People tend to delude themselves into thinking that there is no special danger in the world, that the world is a pretty good place to be, and yet this is an extremely dangerous world that we live in, and it's getting more and more that way every day. Human nature has remained basically the same. However, God did prophesy evil men and seducers shall wax worse and worse as time goes on, and the reality is we are living in those very days right now. There is something wrong with the heart and mind of man. There's a plague in the human heart, as King Solomon said, and to live through these dangerous times, we need a light and a lamp to guide our paths. God's Word is that light.
Live by every word. Tuesdays at 8 a.m. on The Voice 101.3 KPCG and on the web at kpcg.fm.
From the Philadelphia Church of God campus in Edstone, England, this is the Trumpet Daily Program with Stephen Flurry.
We're talking about this ongoing refugee crisis Europe is facing, the worst since World War II. And before the break there, we mentioned that seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. I just want to lead into this segment by referring to one more news piece. This is Ambrose Evans Pritchard's latest on the father of the Euro, how he fears an EU superstate coming along through the back door. It says the Euro's founding father has warned that Europe's latest plan for an EMU-wide finance ministry is a dangerous attempt to smuggle through political union and breaches the basic tenets of modern democracy. Here's the father, largely responsible, the father of this whole project. The father of the Euro. And now he's warning, look, this is getting out of hand. We're turning over a lot of power to the Union. It's all of a sudden becoming very undemocratic. It makes me think of Margaret Thatcher's comment, which we've quoted so often. What was it, back in the early 90s? 1994, maybe, 20 years ago at least. When she was saying, look, you're not anchoring Germany to Europe. You're anchoring Europe to Germany. That's the reality. You can talk about how this union will just kind of spread out the power evenly. But in fact, Germany will dominate. That is Germany's history. And so here comes the Euro's founding father. And he's saying, look, this latest plan for an EMU-wide finance ministry, it's a dangerous attempt to smuggle through political union. It's got to be democratic. If there's going to be a political union, it needs to be through democracy, he's saying. The article says Professor Otmar Issing, the chief architect of monetary union through its early years, said it would be dangerous to transfer control over tax and spending to the EU federal level before full political union has been established, first on democratic foundations. Such a quantum leap in the constitutional structure of Europe, effectively the creation of an EU superstate with a parliament comparable in power to the US Congress, is unthinkable in the current political atmosphere. That's what he sees forming, coming along through the back door. This EU superstate, a superstate with unbridled powers, as the article goes on to say. This is the direction that Europe is headed in. All the headlines about the refugee crisis, it can obscure some of these headlines. But this is where we're headed. This oncoming political union that's going to be democratic in name only. And it's going to be a union dominated, as it already is, by Germany. This union that will downsize. There will be some restructuring, for sure. But look at how all of this is falling right in line with what Herbert Armstrong prophesied for decades. He said all the way back in 1956, the stage is all set. The Germans are coming back from the destruction of World War II in breathtaking manner. Germany is the economic and military heart of Europe. Probably Germany will lead and dominate the coming United States of Europe. But Britain, he said, Britain will be no part of it. That's a headline from 60 years ago, almost. 60 years ago. That's an article Mr. Armstrong wrote 60 years ago, six decades. And now compare it to the headlines that you're seeing today in the newspapers. I mean, Mr. Armstrong was talking about this before there was even a United States of Europe. He was talking about it because the Bible prophesies of this seventh and final resurrection of the Holy Roman Empire. The Bible actually prophesied of a dramatically weakened Britain to be the odd man out. Mr. Armstrong talked about all of this, as I say, 60 years ago. Well, more than that, even. If you can go back to some of the things he wrote in the 1940s. Pretty amazing, I'd say. Much of this, at least with respect to Britain being the odd man out, an empire in decline. Today, of course, it's no longer an empire. All this is discussed in the United States and Britain in prophecy. Mr. Armstrong also talks about the rise of ancient Assyria, modern-day Germany. There's a fair bit in that book, The U.S. and Britain in Prophecy, even pertaining to that. That book that was first printed back in the 1930s, that book that has since gone to 6 million households around the world. Look at what is happening today. Whether you look at Europe, the continent, whether you look at the UK, this once great empire that after two world wars found itself decimated in strength and manpower, found itself in a rapid decline, found itself in the process of devolving its empire and commonwealth into, well, just a second-rate nation in many ways, sidelined, languishing in minor power status, the victim of, as Mr. Armstrong said, a seemingly endless stream of bad luck. But all of it was prophesied. Here's the seventh and final resurrection forming in the heart of Europe. And Britain, the odd man out. And that departure, actually spoken of in Bible prophecy. I gave you that quote from 1956. Again, just to highlight the consistency of this message, you can move right up to 1985, the last year of Herbert Armstrong's life, and see what he said about Britain and about this European Union. In Mystery of the Ages, he talked about a prophecy in Isaiah 14. And in speaking of this, quote, soon coming resurrected Holy Roman Empire, or United States of Europe, he said it was a union of 10 nations to rise out of or following the common market of today. He said Britain will not be in that empire soon to come. How could he say that? How could he say it so dogmatically? And now here we are, as the Daily Mail reports, for the first time, a majority of people in Britain, they want out. They want out. And it's all brought on by this worst refugee crisis since World War II. That 10-nation superpower in Europe is about to spring onto the scene. Britain's not going to be part of it. And isn't it amazing that Mr. Armstrong, he gave us that forecast for both the 10-nation superpower, and Britain being left on the outside. He gave us the forecast for both of those developments, both of those prophecies, back in the 1940s and 50s. That's pretty amazing when you think about it. Let's just go through a few verses in Hosea, this book that has so much to say about the people of Britain, the modern-day descendants of Ephraim, the tribe of Ephraim in the Old Testament, the family of Ephraim. This is Hosea chapter 2, and verse 8 it says, "For she did not know that I gave her corn and wine and oil and multiplied her silver and gold, which they prepared for Baal." God gave them all of that power, that wealth. God gave them the empire. God gave them the prosperity. And look at the blessings. It's talked about throughout the United States and Britain in prophecy, but so many other books, even recent history books, have just drawn attention to the size and scope of the British Empire. One example here from Churchill and Empire by Lawrence James. It says in 1900, the red bits on the world map added up to 1.8 million square miles, which were home to 294 million people. That was the British Empire approaching its peak. It says there were 13 million British colonists, most of whom were first or second generation immigrants who had settled in Canada, Newfoundland, Natal, Cape Colony, Australia, New Zealand. This is when Brits were immigrating to all these other nations of the world and taking with them prosperity, law and order, a system of education and government that worked, that helped to improve the quality of life for the locals. Say what you will about all of the evils of colonialism, but the truth of it, not that it was perfect by any means, the truth is that it spread education and culture and wealth and prosperity and law and order. It spread it over all the earth. And look at it in comparison to the trends and things we see today, with Britain reduced to a second-rate power. And now people from all other nations on the earth streaming into Britain, the United States, Europe. And it's presenting so many problems. Why? God has something to say about all of these developments. Look at the unmatched power and wealth that our peoples, the United States and Britain, have amassed over the course of about two centuries due to the promises of God. That's what's discussed in the United States and Britain in prophecy. And God here in Hosea 2 says, "I gave it to you. I multiplied these blessings. But what have we done with them? We've squandered them away." Verse 9 says, "Therefore will I return and take away my corn and in the time thereof, and my wine in the season thereof, and will recover my wool and my flax, given to cover her nakedness, and now will I discover her lewdness in the sight of her lovers, and none shall deliver her out of my hand." We squandered away these blessings. God's taken away so much, as it says here in Hosea chapter 2. Chapter 4 talks about the sins, the many sins of our nations. Hosea chapter 4 and verse 1 says, "Hear the word of the Eternal, you children of Israel, for the Lord has a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there's no truth, nor mercy, nor knowledge of God in the land. By swearing and lying and killing and stealing and committing adultery, they break out and blood touches blood." There's no truth. No truth, no mercy, knowledge of God, none of that. But just rampant sin. And verse 6 says, "My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because you have rejected knowledge. I will also reject you. And you shall be no priest to me, seeing you have forgotten the law of your God, I will also forget your children. We've forgotten God's laws. We've forgotten about God's government. And so God says, I'm going to forget you and your children, your families. As they were increased, verse 7 says, so they sinned against me. Therefore will I change their glory into shame. This is God's perspective on what we're seeing. Look down at the end of this chapter, verse 17 and 18. It talks about Ephraim being joined to idols. It talks about whoredoms. It talks about rulers with shame. It's talking about today's spiritual condition in Britain. It's hit rock bottom. Our peoples are just bonded to their idols, idolatry, totally ensnared by the pleasures of this world, pleasure-seeking. People see that, the prosperity and the glitz of the Western lifestyle, and they think life's just going to continue on from one exciting event to the next. But look, the signs of disaster are everywhere. They're eating away at the fabric of our nations. They're eating away at the substance of our nations. Which is why our peoples need to wake up and understand what's happening. The United States and Britain in Prophecy will help you to do that. That's a vital book. If you want to understand what's happening in the world today, if you want to understand Bible prophecy, that's an excellent place to start. Herbert Armstrong's classic, The United States and Britain in Prophecy. You're listening to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in Edmond, Oklahoma, our headquarters campus. We'll be right back for a few closing remarks.
This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily. An exciting, pulsating, vital third of all the Bible is devoted to prophecy. And approximately 90% of all prophecy pertains to our time, now, in this 21st century. It is a warning to us, to our English-speaking peoples, of immediate life and death import. The prophecies come alive once their doors are opened by this now-discovered master key. The United States and Britain in Prophecy will open, to open minds, this hitherto closed vital third of all the Bible. No story of fiction ever was so strange, so fascinating, so absorbing, so packed with interest and suspense as this gripping story of our identity and our ancestry. Request the United States and Britain in Prophecy and a free one-year subscription to the Trumpet magazine right now. To learn more, please visit thetrumpet.com. This is KPCG-FM, and this is the Trumpet Daily.
We've talked often about the goal to send 2,000 copies of Mystery of the Ages out to people around the UK and Ireland. And right now we're at 999, as I mentioned on yesterday's program. Our production manager back in Edmond sent me a few updated stats on the bigger picture. And he said to me that we're going to surpass 3,000 requests for literature as a result of the program here in the UK. This next weekend, it'll be our 37th weekend airing the Key of David UK. And after 37 weeks, we'll surpass 3,000 requests for literature. So you can see there from that figure that about a third of what has been requested is for Mystery of the Ages. But we don't want to forget about the other two-thirds, the 2,000 or so that have requested other books and booklets produced by this church. It says here in this report that it took 20 weeks for us to surpass 1,000 requests with the program, and then 11 weeks after that to surpass 2,000. So we're really heading in a nice direction. 3,000, as I say, after 36 total weeks, and we'll see where we are in total by the end of the year, and also with that goal for Mystery of the Ages. I just want to conclude by going through a piece here that I've been meaning to get to for several days now. I just haven't been able to fit it in. But if you're approaching middle age or at middle age, as I am, or beyond middle age, I think this is a story here that can offer some bit of encouragement if around all of the gadgets in the house or the equipment in the car or wherever your children happen to be running circles around you, or if maybe you're feeling it, you're hitting through some midlife crisis points, you're feeling it physically. Here's some bit of encouragement for you, the listener, from the Daily Telegraph. 50 is the new 42, it says. Technology's making brains of middle-aged people younger. How about that? Kind of goes against what we hear so often about the bad side of technology. And there's definitely a bad side, for sure. It says here, 50 is the new 42, scientists have concluded after discovering that the brains of middle-aged people are getting sharper and younger to keep up with the demands of modern technology. People over age 50 are scoring increasingly better on tests of cognitive function, and researchers believe it's because of the increased mental stimulation of computers and mobile phones, just keeping up with the technology. This article says that on average, people have to keep in mind about 10 passwords per day. Passwords that they're using on websites and such. And how that's helping to keep our older and advancing minds sharper in some respects. It says here, finally, a population study of English over 50s found that the test scores of many people today were the same or better than those of people up to 8 years younger who were tested 6 years ago. So a final word of encouragement for those of you, many of you, as I know, who are in that middle-aged bracket of life. You're listening once again to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial. We appreciate you listening to us once again today, and we'll look forward to talking to you again tomorrow.